is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, the Master Gardener Coordinator for Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. And by the magic of Zoom, I will have the opportunity to interview Sue Mosbacher, who is not only in charge of the Master Gardener Program for the Central Sierra, which is the four counties, she is also in charge of the Master Food Preservers Program. So hello, Sue.
Hi, Debbie.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, good. And you did a first, I understand, for the Master Food Preservers, you did a class last night, starting at 6:30?
Yes.
And that was an amazing class on food preserving. Are you going to be posting that somewhere?
We are, and we'll be doing more of them. This was our first foray into the online classes. It was live. We did a demo. And so we wanted to see how it worked, work some kinks out, and we survived, and I think everybody learned and had a good time. So we'll be posting the link on our Master Food Preserver site for Central Sierra, and we'll be scheduling some more of them because it worked out well. We had a lot of fun with it.
Oh, good, good. No, it was fun. As an attendee, it was a lot of fun for me to be there. But you did a section on food safety in regards to preserving food, which was wonderful. And it just, some things I remembered, and some things actually, I gotta admit, I had probably had forgotten. But one of the things that has come up, of course, it's in our current environment, is food safety in regards to COVID-19. With a virus, and I know everybody's concerned about that. Can you talk a little bit how you're handling that?
Sure. One of the things that I'm not doing is I'm not soaking my fruits and vegetables in soapy water, because the food will just absorb it, and the soap is not something you want to eat. But the big thing to remember is that the way that you get the virus is by breathing it in. And if it does happen to be on fresh produce, you're going to eat it. So it's going to go into your acidic stomach and not into your lungs. And so it won't have an impact that way. We have on our UC Davis food safety website, there are a variety of publications, and one of them is about COVID-19 and food safety FAQs. And it actually says, you know, there's no evidence that the virus that causes COVID-19 is spread by eating foods that might contain small amounts of the virus. So it's not something that's considered a risk factor. And I also checked with our statewide microbiologist, Erin DiCaprio, and asked her about concerns people have if they're preserving foods right now for the state fair, to give away as gifts, if there was, you know, any possibility of contamination. And she said, no, it's very similar to other COVID-19 viruses or coronaviruses. and if it's in food, you're going to be cooking it, it will be destroyed. And again, you're eating it, not breathing your food. And so it's not going to be an issue. That's reassuring.
That is very reassuring. That really is. But one of the things with food safety, and I was noticing in your presentation last night, already you're washing your hands, it seems like, a lot, and you're keeping things clean. One of the things that I know has been talked about is disinfecting counters and all that kind of stuff within your house and doing it on a regular basis. What do you use for a disinfectant?
use bleach water. And so I do a couple of things. First, I clean, which is not disinfecting or sanitizing. It's taking the stuff off the counter, taking a dishcloth, and I've been using a lot of dishcloths and not paper towels lately so that I don't run out. But you take a dishcloth and make sure you wipe off anything, clean up the sticky stuff so that it's, you start with a clean surface. And then I either spray the bleach water or I have disinfectant wipes. So I use a combination of those two, one or the other. But then the big thing that people sometimes forget about is, you know, if they take the wipe or they spray it, they get it wet and then they wipe it all down and then clean it off so they can start working. And they're not these magic tools that will automatically zap the bacteria. If there's anything on your counter, you got to let it sit there for at least a minute to work. And so you want to get it nice and damp, and then you air dry it. And while it's air drying, you can go and prep other things. And then you can go ahead and wipe things down. But you got to give the cleaning solutions a chance to work.
Oh, yeah. Now that's something I have to admit I haven't been doing at home, but I'm going to start. And how long did you say you should leave it sitting on the counter? You spray the counter.
Spray the counter and you can, you know, get it all wet and leave it on for at least a minute. If you want to disinfect it, where you're going to be killing every possible pathogen that could be on it, you have to make sure it's wet enough to sit for 10 minutes. But a minute is fine. It just sanitizes it, and that'll kill most of the bacteria that could be an issue.
Wow. Okay, that's great information. That really is. Now,
did you see one of the things I did in the demo last night with my phone?
Oh, you know what? That was great.
Yep.
That was.
I make sure that, because I use my phone when I'm timing in the kitchen, because I'll pull it out and I'll push in, you know, how long I'm going to time it. But if I'm cooking something and somebody calls me on the phone, I answer, I send texts. So I'm touching the surface of my phone a lot. And I'm embarrassed to think about the floors that that has fallen on out of my pocket. And so I know my phone is not clean. And so whenever I'm cooking, when I clean down my counter, and I only use wipes on my phone, I don't spray the phone with bleach, but I make sure that I take a disinfectant wipe and I clean the front and the back and the side surfaces of my phone. And then I put it on the clean counter and I let it sit there so it can air dry as well. So that way it is one of my kitchen tools that I've sanitized before I use it.
Oh, good. I've got a question for you because this is in regards to growing produce out of the garden. And I know a lot of people, which is wonderful, they like to give produce to their neighbors and then they can do food preserving, or maybe they're going to just, you know, eat it on a daily basis. What would you recommend for that? I mean, what would be the steps? Somebody shows up and they drop off a box of, you know, maybe zucchini at your doorstep. What would you do? What would be the steps to take it from there?
Say thank you. Then bring it in the house, and you don't need to wash it until you're ready to use it. And even washing is too strong of a phrase. You need to rinse it off. But first, you just, you know, if there's any dirt clumps on it, knock those off. And then if it's something that's normally stored out in the open, you know, you just keep it stored at room temperature until you're ready to use it. And most of the time people use it fairly quickly, but you don't want to rinse it off until you're actually ready to cook with it or preserve it, because even though it has the skin around it, it's still going to absorb some water, and bacteria needs water to grow. And so if you're giving it more water, you might have more bacteria growing, but also it'll impact the sogginess of the fruit or vegetable. So you don't need to rinse them until you're actually ready to use them. And then you just rinse, you don't soak them. Because again, if you soak them, it's going to absorb a lot of the water and impact the quality of the food.
And then I'm kind of assuming they're going to probably do a good practice that they would wash their hands before they maybe pick up the, and then when they're done, maybe wash their hands or.
Yep. All the things that we've been hearing about. So you want to make sure that you protect yourself from anything that might be sitting on there. But again, they haven't had any research that shows that you can pick it up off of fresh produce. But you know, if you pick up fresh zucchini or fresh tomatoes or whatever we have, if they're dirty, your hands are going to be dirty. So you're going to wash your hands anyway. And hopefully we've all learned how to wash our hands well and frequently.
That's true. Now, what would be the procedure if you, in fact, I think Vera might have mentioned this, that sometimes she's able to find a really good deal on canning jars at the thrift store. You know, of course, mm-hmm. you're going to have to buy new lids, but the jars themselves are really good. And she talks about how to check it for chips on the very top and that kind of stuff. But say when everything gets back to normal, but they keep talking about how this could be in waves, the COVID-19, it could come back. So we still want to probably maintain good practices. You go to the thrift store, you buy maybe some canning jars and you stick it in the trunk of your car. Then what do you do?
So then you take them home and wash them and wash your hands. And the nice thing about canning jars is it's not a porous surface, so nothing is going to get absorbed in it. So if there's any pathogens on the outside, when you wash them, you're going to wash them down the drain. And then we practice our safe handling techniques that we're all learning now, and you just wash your hands. And a cool thing about the canning jars is there's no expiration date on them. So anything you find, as long as they're high quality, you can use them for years. So your initial food safety procedure would be just to wash them and then store them and make sure that you wash your hands after you touch anything that's dirty.
Okay. And then there was something about the rings you can reuse, but their very top areas, the ones that the lids mm-hmm. have kind of a membrane on it, you said. And so the lids you have to buy for every mm-hmm. time you're canning, right?
Correct.
And then I know some people are doing a lot of ordering on the internet, and I think maybe you mentioned that you could order them on the internet. So if they come in a box and they're shipped by, let's pick on Amazon ships them to you, should you leave that box out in the sun for a couple of days? I know I hear about people, you don't have to do that.
No, you don't have to do that. And if you think about it getting delivered to you, there's hardly anybody that's touched it. Maybe the person that pulled the package, they put it in the box, it gets shipped in the box, and it's been a day or two anyway. So there's very little human contact with that package. And there's quite a bit of documentation, especially on the UC Davis Food Safety website, about handling things from packaging. And if you're concerned, you know, if you pick it up, you put it in your cupboard, you wash your hands, you're going to be good, because it won't last on it, even if there's something on there. And the risk is a lot less for those kind of delivery packages than things that a lot of people have been touching.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
And one of the things I should mention, Sue, is with your classes on showing people how to preserve their food safely, you actually talk about a really nasty bacteria that if you don't do the process correctly, that you could actually introduce to your foods. And the symptoms that you have, and I think I'm going to mispronounce it. I know it's Clostridium. Mm-hmm. Can you help me out there?
Botulinum.
Yes.
Botulinum.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so there's all these different practices, maybe on a different show we can go into, because we may not be able to have the time for it. And they should actually watch your class that you're going to be posting. But that, it seemed like probably a little bit scarier than the COVID-19 in regards to food.
Let me give you a nutshell story.
Or okay.
Explanation? Okay, sure.
Yes.
All right. So there's a lot of pathogens out there. And most of the time when you just boil, you'll kill them. It'll kill most yeast, molds, and bacterias. And they all need air and moisture to survive. But there's a series of pathogens that grow in anaerobic environments without air. And the one that we're concerned with food safety issues is called Clostridium botulinum. And it can't grow in the air, and it can't grow in high acid foods like jams and jellies and fruits. It can only grow in a low acid environment, and our stomach is a very high acid environment. So if we eat it, it just passes through. And so it also needs moisture and room temperature. And so if you take, well, let me backtrack. So this pathogen is around a lot. It's on the dirt. So when we bring in our fresh vegetables, it might be on it. It's microscopic, so you can't see it. But if you take your vegetables, which are a low acid food, and you can them in water, and then you do a boiling water canner so it forces the air out and creates a vacuum seal, you now have an oxygen-free environment. You have low acid food. You have moisture, and then you store it in your kitchen cupboard, which is room temperature. And so when that bacteria can't grow, it creates a spore. I call it like the chocolate candy coating of death. And so it's got the spore protective covering around the bacteria, and it just sits there. But when it's in an environment when it can grow, which is now our jar of vegetables that's been boiling water canned, it doesn't get killed at boiling water temperature. You got to get it up to 240 degrees to kill it. So now it's in this perfect little home that's low acid, no oxygen, room temperature, moisture, and so then it grows. And then it can create a toxin, which is called botulinum. And then you open up your jar, it doesn't look bad, it doesn't smell bad, it doesn't taste bad, because the pathogen's odorless, colorless, and tasteless, and so you eat it. And if you eat that toxin, then you can get the disease botulism. And the way you prevent that whole thing is if you're going to have any kind of vegetable that you're going to be preserving, you have to can it in a pressure canner to get the temperature up to 240 degrees, and you have to follow the instructions, because it's the time to get up to pressure, the time you process it at pressure, and then the cool down time, that whole total time, and the temperature is what kills the bacteria. And then you don't have to worry about it. So the biggest thing to know is that if you have a low acid product, you pressure can it. If you acidify it, like last night in our class, we made pickled garlic, and garlic is a vegetable. It's a low acid product, but we added vinegar, which was a commercial product at 5% acidity. And so we changed it from a low acid product to a high acid product. And so we could just process it in a boiling water canner. Last night I used a steam canner, and we don't have to worry about the Clostridium botulinum growing if it's in there.
Wow, that is great information. And
I guess
Sue,
it was in a nutshell, huh? Sorry.
No, that's great information, but we ran out of time for this segment. So the important thing is for them to check out your videos that you're going to be posting on the website and at Central Sierra Cooperative Extension. Just Google it. I do it all the time. You'll find it. And Sue, I want to thank you so much. This has been great.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, the Master Gardener Coordinator for Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. I'm back at the Sonora office talking to our Tuolumne Master Gardener, who is also the president, Lisa Page. Hello, Lisa.
Hello, Debbie.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you today.
We always have such fascinating conversations.
Yes, we do.
And the conversation that we want to have today is talking about how our home gardens evolve. We start off with a certain garden, and then that garden changes, and the reasons why it change. So now you've lived on your property for quite a few years.
I moved up here in September of 1990, and at that time our property didn't have a fence around it.
And yikes. I'm listening to this now, yeah, saying yikes.
Yikes now when you think about it. And the majority of my property is in front of my house, so that's where the most sun is. So that's where our garden is today. But at the time, I don't know why, but I was thinking, okay, there's this big, huge, gigantic granite boulder on the side lot next to us, which is undeveloped. And the soil looked really nice there. And I thought, oh, this would be a good spot for a garden. And I could use the rock as kind of a wall on one side.
Oh, good thinking. Yeah.
And knowing full well that there's deer everywhere and that they eat things, because at that time I would think the deer came up on my porch to eat a rose.
Oh.
Which means it had to, well, since there was no fence, I'm sure it didn't go up the 14 stairs. It probably came just on the front. But so I found this. It was, probably couldn't have been more than 10 by 10 at the most, I think.
Okay.
I rigged it with bird netting. I had some squash growing. I had some, I think it was a couple melon plants. Probably there had to have been a tomato, knowing me. And it went well. Everything was growing beautiful. The deer weren't able to munch through the bird netting because it was really small. And then next thing I know, that they must have just decided they were going to jump into it, and they just jumped into the middle of the bird netting. Now, obviously, they didn't get stuck while I was watching.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So
I
don't
even
remember
think they would attempt to do that.
I don't know why. If maybe they jumped down from the rock or.
Huh.
But so eventually, the spot where our garden is today, when my husband bought the house, had it's flat. It had had a doughboy pool on it.
Okay.
So obviously there was no topsoil anyway.
Right.
And the guy that owned the house before, he had put that pool in, and it was all like river rock, smaller river rock underneath.
Right.
So we had to clean all that rock, buckets and buckets, and still find rocks to this day when I'm digging sometimes. And then my husband started with the jackhammer.
Good.
Because it's decomposed granite.
Oh, and it was determined.
So he just made a small... it wasn't too small. Our first bed was up against a rock wall that we had started to hold this small hillside in. And it was probably 3x8, and that was our first bed. And in between time, we had come across a brother-in-law of ours had given us a bunch of free chain link fence. Mm-hmm. And being young enough and strong enough to do it at the time, we stretched it around the front of the property. It's 8 foot high to keep the deer out.
Nice.
So that we just started with that one bed. Because he dug down, probably at the time it was probably about 2 feet. Mm-hmm. And lined it with chicken wire, knowing that we had gophers everywhere.
Right.
And come to find out later that chicken wire rusts out after 5 years, and that was a bummer. But so we started with the one, and the second bed was probably, actually that wasn't the second bed, the first bed, that was the second bed. The first bed was only maybe 2x6. Mm-hmm. I still grow in that bed today. It's still there. We had to dig it back up and reline it.
How many beds do you have now?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
9 beds?
Various shapes and sizes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then you grow in these beds, mostly vegetables, right?
That's all. Well,
or all vegetables?
Herbs.
All edibles.
Herbs,
edibles.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like to have something blooming in my garden when I'm growing vegetables for various reasons.
And then with the vegetables, you start harvesting at what time of the year? Are you able
It depends on what the vegetable is. Squash is usually your earliest.
Okay.
To have vegetables on it, you know, maybe within 30 days with some of them. I'd say maybe not 30, but 45 to 50 for an early squash. This is usually a crookneck or something like that. And I actually think I did a winter garden a couple years in a row, and I always started a spring garden in March. I'll do a little small spring garden with peas and spinach, and because I was always reading, always researching.
Right.
I found out about square foot gardening.
Oh, which is kind of an intensive
type
of gardening. You can pack a lot of stuff into
spaces. I think it's Mel Bartholomew that wrote the original square foot gardening book.
That sounds about right.
He uses grids, and that's just not my style. So I just took the plant spacing idea. I've been known to plant tomatoes as close as a foot apart.
Wow.
But then when you're growing a indeterminate variety, which is your vining variety that gets huge.
They can get, what, 6 feet?
They could go higher than that. You know, the higher first year of some of the beds, like our middle bed is, I want to say, 6 by 6 square.
Wow. So is it absolutely critical to have a fence around your vegetable garden?
Absolutely. Either that or you're going to fence in each individual bed, which, mind you, I don't know. I think we went with the in the ground because we could go deeper.
Okay.
Instead of building raised beds.
A raised bed.
And not having, you know, that way we were only buying the wire and right. some soil amendments.
And
which
that's to keep the gophers out.
Yeah, which is also an absolute necessity. So, but if you're new and you have small space, mm-hmm. you know, you could do any size of a raised bed. I've seen people do them along a fence because they have a very small backyard.
Okay.
Maybe 2 feet wide. You don't generally want a raised bed any wider than four or five feet across because you want to be able to reach the middle from standing on either side.
Good point. That's a good reason.
But now as I've gotten older and have worked with the raised beds at the demonstration mm-hmm. garden, where we've built some cinder block ones so that they are higher off the ground.
Right.
So that you don't have to bend over quite so much. My son was just saying to me this past summer, he goes, Mom, we've got to get these beds higher for you so you don't
have
to keep bending over with your back and your knees. And
right.
So I wanted...
Sounds like a good idea.
Our goal was, you know, we've left the hardware cloth because we had to replace all the chicken wire.
Okay.
Which means we had to dig out all that dirt.
That's a painful experience.
Well, it needed to be re-amended anyway, but... The goal is we started piling rocks around the edge because you have your wire sticking up above the edge of the dirt. You can't just have it ground level. The gophers will just go, okay, right. I'll just go right over.
Right.
And the goal was to keep building those up. But,
okay.
You know, time changes. You run. You don't have enough time. We used to get rocks when we'd go get firewood up in mm-hmm. the forest. And we would use those. But we haven't done that for years because we just... Yeah, didn't have the time, and then now we don't have the body to do it anymore.
Body to do it.
So I've been contemplating even doing the cinder block thing
up
from where I already have the bed. Then think about it. I mean, if I go up 3 cinder blocks, that's probably, what, 3.5 feet?
Something like that.
So I would have the depth up of the 3.5 feet above plus the 3 feet below, and that's pretty good.
So your garden is still changing.
Oh, it's always changing. Except for last year, no, 3 years ago now, I should say. My husband dug one last bed. He says, this is the last one I'm going to dig. Because in between making new beds, I would just do individual cages. So I had one area that's a full bed now mm-hmm. that I grew Roma tomatoes in. And I think I had six plants, each in their own individual gopher basket.
Wow.
And that stayed that way for a long time, but it's really hard to amend soil in a gopher basket every year.
That sounds very difficult.
So one year I decided, okay, enough. I'm just going to dig it out and make a bed. And so there we go. And some naturally were pretty easy to figure out where to do. Because there's the one flat spot, but then it drops down and it kind of has different levels.
Right. So did you replace all that chicken wire with hardware
cloth?
Yes,
we did.
Okay. I mean, just kind
of... So anyway, 3 years ago, he dug one last bed. It's along the creek side of the garden.
Right.
Up at the top of a hill.
Yeah.
So we have old diving boards. We're good at repurposing things because mm-hmm. of the business that we have. And so those make great retaining walls.
Oh, good idea.
So we use a retaining wall with the diving board. And we got some old solar panels that I found if I cut the solar panels and use them to line the edges of the beds, that slows down the intrusion of the roots from various trees.
Because
it's amazing how far tree roots can travel. And they're going for all the water that they can sense in the garden.
Right. And, Lisa, I hate to say it again, but we ran out of time, and it's so much fun hearing about your garden and the important lessons that you learned in all your years of gardening. And your garden is still changing. It's still so changing. Much fun. So thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Debbie.
Bye-bye.